Welcome to Real Estate I Love It podcast. I'm Shelley Hoffman, real estate expert and community advisor. Join me and various guests who are expert in what they do, such as home inspectors, mortgage brokers, investors, wholesalers. There are so many aspects to our industry that most people are not aware of, and I'm here to help you learn about them. I'm an educator by trade, and this podcast is to educate you in the world of real estate. Hey everybody, it's Shelley Hoffman and I'm with Christy Brightman today. Christy, I've gotten to know you a little bit better because we do kind of a mastermind Monday morning call in the Clubhouse app. And I think she's extremely smart and intelligent and explains things well. So I asked Christy to join me this morning. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So one of the things that we had talked about was pre and post possession in real estate, which we have never liked ever on in the real estate part because it creates issues. And then you look at it more from a legal standpoint. So, but it's becoming more popular because of the way this market is, right? You guys are seeing it more?
We are seeing it a lot more. It used to be, you know, one maybe every, I can't even give you a number necessarily. It was so infrequent that we really didn't think about it. And the answer was always no, for the most part, depending on who we were. If somebody was asking us for pre-closing or post-closing, the answer was almost always no. And people would just deal with it because at that time we could simultaneous close and there weren't all these holdups with other people moving or banks not being able to close on time. You know, the holdups with title and surveys and all that didn't exist. But now they do because of COVID. So people have to be a little more flexible. So it's become part of deals much more regularly. To the point where we end up having to grapple with it and talk to people about the risks and whether they're willing to take those, which just about everybody is, because they just want the deal done.
Right. Yeah. And to your point about the risk is most people don't think about it. They just think, well, if the person has vacated the house, if the sellers have already moved out, the house is sitting there empty, why can't they just move in or at least start moving their stuff into the property? Right. They're not looking at it from, you know, we talked to Steve Ladd a little bit from the insurance standpoint, but from the attorney side, what are some of the pitfalls? Like, what are people not seeing or thinking about when it seems like pre and post possession is such a great idea?
It's mostly a liability problem. There's that, right? Because you've got your buddies that are helping you move into the property. If I own it and I'm just going to happen to be there and somebody slips and falls, who's responsible for that? You know, something even more tragic than they break their arm. Who knows? You're probably going to sue me, which is unfortunate, but that's one of the risks that I run no matter what. But we need to make sure that you, as the new owner, have adequate insurance that's going to cover me in the event that happens, because that's really your responsibility, right? Also, if something happens and your stuff perishes because there's a fire, that is also something we have to deal with, which that's where Steve Ladd comes into the insurance piece to say, look, these are the types that you need. This is what will cover everybody. It'll keep the seller in a comfortable spot, and it will also cover the buyer as well as their stuff. So that's one thing. But then the other big thing, it's really what happens if you don't close, right? That's my biggest fear. Like, we can deal with the insurance stuff and we can all probably get where we need to go. But if for some reason the closing does not happen, right, obviously as COVID was hitting, people were getting their verifications of employment. You know, we had some people that lost their job a week before they're supposed to close. So they couldn't get that because they're laid off or furloughed or whatever. So the bank was like, yeah, not closing that one. So what are you supposed to do if they're already in your house? We don't know when they're going to go back to work. Nobody knew what was going to happen. So how do we get you out, which is the other problem, because right now especially, landlord-tenant evictions are stayed. We can't evict anybody. We don't know how evictions are going to be handled once we can evict people starting May 1. So figuring all that out and waiting as you're a seller who's probably trying to sell your house because you might need the cash to buy another one, or maybe you don't need it, but you kind of need it. And then you've got random people living in your house and who knows what's going on. Right. So that's the bigger piece that scares us all, is how do you get people out? From the buyer perspective that's walking into the home, you know, they're obviously not as concerned. But on a post-closing side, if I'm the seller remaining, right, so buyer has closed, they own it, but they're not moved in yet, I'm still living there, they have the same issue. How are they going to get me out if they don't close on their new buy before any sort of reasonable time? So that's the bigger concern. And right now there are no answers as to how that's going to operate, even in this kind of post-COVID-ish world that we're about to enter. So it's a concern.
If we take COVID out of it, though, okay, so let's go back to 2019. And there was a pre-post possession where the buyer moved into the seller's home and was paying, you know, typically attorneys, you come up with a daily rate, right? They're, the buyer's obviously paying their insurance to be there, which is typically more of a renter's insurance because they don't fully own the property. But they also pay a certain amount back to the seller to cover any mortgage payment, taxes, right, to that piece.
Correct.
Right? If the buyer's living in there and they're paying that daily rate, whether they send it weekly, monthly, or they settle it at closing, pre-COVID, is it the full eviction process that had to happen if you cannot get the buyer to leave that house?
Yeah, we would go with a summary proceeding, which is basically the eviction proceeding to get them out, which pre-COVID was relatively quick. We could probably have them out inside of 30 days. Because it was just a known process. You know, you go to your justice court, they do what they need to do, you get the warrant of eviction, you serve it. If they don't leave, then it becomes a little bit longer, but it was a process that everybody was comfortable with and everybody knew what to expect. It was still a process though, right? We still had to wait 30 days plus to get you out, but now I can't even tell you that it's 30 days. So even waiting that long was uncomfortable, right? Because who knows what they're gonna do to your house while they're in there. I mean, I would hope that people aren't that mean-spirited, but you never know. So, you know, they're about to lose the house that they wanted and that they thought that we're going to close on. So tenants do not nice things sometimes when they're being evicted.
No.
Never, right?
Never.
So that was, but even then, even knowing what the timeline was, it still wasn't palatable because at that point we could say no, right? We could be like, you know what, we're just not going to do it. You're just going to wait. You're going to figure it out. And that's that.
I know from our standpoint, because again, that's a lawyer decision. We always tell our clients, you need to talk to your attorney. We don't, for us to have any of those conversations would be a real estate professionals practicing law, you know, and that's one thing that is drilled into us. Make sure you never do that. Always refer them to the attorney. From the standpoint of when a client approaches us, the one thing I say is I cannot imagine anybody would even consider giving pre or post possession until you have the commitment letter, right? Because it's the commitment letter that says at least the buyer's loan is good with these particular items. But that's not always the case. Even if the commitment letter comes through, I know I've seen it, I'm sure you've seen it, where there's just one piece that on that commitment that the buyer cannot clear to get that loan, correct? So even the commitment is a risk.
Yep, even once you have the commitment, even post-commitment, title's in, title's clean, all that stuff, there's still a risk that it doesn't close for whatever reason. They went out and they bought, you know, a new set of bedroom furniture, and now they don't qualify in a debt-to-income credit ratio because, you know, even though they didn't listen to their, you know, mortgage officer or anything like that, don't go and buy anything, don't get new credit cards, and they did it, and now they can't close.
Yeah, and don't co-sign for a car. I've had that twice where they didn't buy a car, they co-signed for a car, and then, and they were just in the pre-approval process. They hadn't bought yet. Oh, that's not true. One time I was the listing agent and a buyer, but they figured it out, you know, but it took a little bit of time, but that's a case where they had asked for pre-possession. It was not granted. And I think it ended up being about another, I would say month and a half post the contract date that we actually closed. So this, my sellers would have been a nervous wreck, you know, because until you hit that closing table, you really don't know if everybody's going to sign, right?
Yep.
And get it done. Although we all sign at different times now, there's not really a closing table kind of a.
It is different now, which makes it hard to deal with seller issues that come up, but we can put a pin in that and talk about it in a bit. But the possession problem is anymore just something that has to happen, and the risks haven't changed. They've only gotten worse, but we're still doing it more so now than ever. But one thing that would be really fantastic for everybody, obviously for you guys too, so you knew, could tell your clients better what to expect, is if the local brokers had a form. So Monroe County has a form. They have a form for pretty much everything that you deal with. Obviously, they've got the standard contractual form to buy or sell. They've got a separate one for vacant land. And then they have one for pre or post-closing possession, which is very nice because all the attorneys know what to expect. All of you guys know what you're about to tell your clients they're getting into. It is very clear so there's no confusion, because here everybody's got their own form. So it requires us to review that form, see what's in, see what's not, and rework it or negotiate it. And that just takes a lot of time and effort where people don't, and patience is at a minimum for pretty much everybody too. So taking all that time to do that is tough right now.
Right. And to a small point of what you said, and it might've been you, it might've been somebody else. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the difference between how one attorney's office handles it and another one in the different forms is even as simple as, can the buyer change the locks when they move in? Mm-hmm. Well, it's not their home. So by changing the locks, they're now not allowing the sellers access to their house, which I'm assuming they'd have to give notice to go into, you know, because it's a different,
sure.
Can't just walk in. But even that's something that's not clear within our, at least our area, right?
Yep.
Because there's nothing definitely written about it. I thought that was interesting because it's all those little details that nobody, you know, thinks of. You think of the daily rate, the insurance, but it's how is the house going to be handled? How are you going to handle the property when you move into a home that you don't actually own, right?
Yep. So in our form now, there is an explicit statement that you may not change locks because of that very that other attorney's kind of view on it, which it wasn't wrong based on the form they were looking at. But it's something that just from a seller perspective, I'm like, wait, you're telling me I don't have access to my house anymore? So, you know, even I would have to give them notice to show up. I can't just show up when I feel like it because, you know, they're living there. It's their space to be in. But I can't. Like, you couldn't do that in a normal landlord-tenant situation, and you certainly shouldn't be able to do it in a post-closing or pre-closing possession situation. Because, you know, again, you may not close.
We have documentations that we give out to clients, and they'll say, you know, suggested things to do post-closing. And that's that weird piece. So one of them might be, you might want to consider changing the locks. So they're getting a piece of information from one side of the transaction that says, when you close, right? It doesn't say when you move in, but at the same time, in everybody's mind, it's like, oh, it's our house. We do it. Yeah.
We're just waiting on a couple of things.
Yeah.
You know, traditionally before COVID and even now, we still like to see that there's a scheduled closing date before we allow it to happen, because at least we know we're bank clear, we're title clear. Granted, we still have to get through that last couple things, like a verification of employment and whatever else right before closing. There's some more comfort now that that's probably going to happen. Pre-COVID, it really wasn't a question for the most part. Like, I mean, there's always a possibility that somebody could lose their job or quit, but highly unlikely. But with COVID in the beginning pieces, nobody knew. Now I think everybody's a little more comfortable. So once we get that scheduled closing date on the books and we know everybody's happy, it's a little more comfortable, right? Because the risk to that we're not going to close because of some crazy thing that comes up is much less, and we can get there a little more comfortably.
So you had mentioned putting a pin in like things that come up on the seller side. Probably, I'm assuming like maybe the final walkthrough or something like that. What were you in referencing to when you made the statement? You remember?
So that wasn't about pre or post closing possession.
Or you can switch topics, Christy. I like all the information.
Yeah, there's always something to kind of, there's another fork in the road to start to talk about. But there also, oh yes, that's right. It was a walkthrough thing because people don't show up at closing anymore. That's what we were talking about.
Yes.
Since sellers don't come, right? They send the buyers an escrow package with everything signed, which is nice. And then the buyers will send them back checks when it's all done. But if there are issues at the walkthrough or something else comes up, there is no way to negotiate that the day of. Because getting the seller's attorney on the horn is going to be really difficult to try to figure out, oh, where are they? What are they doing? They're probably not even paying attention that they have a closing. They're generally aware it's closing today. Sometimes they don't even know the time, though, because they're so not a part of it. They're like, yeah, seller signed last week. We can get you documents whenever. Just go close it.
Yep.
So if there's a big issue, buyers end up taking it on the chin anymore. They're like, well, you can walk. That's your option if you want to. But do you really? Because we're here. And even if it feels really unfair, they just end up kind of closing over it.
I did have one. I was talking to somebody maybe a month or so ago where the seller found out, oh my goodness, I can't even remember how the seller found out that the house didn't close. But to your point, the seller attorney probably knew it happened that day or was happening that day, but didn't know, you know, what time. And the seller's, so what ended up happening was the seller's attorney, the seller called the attorney and said, how did closing go? The attorney said, let me find out. The buyers walked because there was something at the final walkthrough. So it was miscommunication. I look at your eyes. I love it. There was miscommunication all the way around, right? But I think a lot of that has to do with COVID and everything happening in pieces. That little end closing piece wasn't necessarily conveyed. And I've never heard of that before, you know, where the seller had to call the seller's attorney to find out if the property closed. And the agent didn't know because the buyer's agent didn't let the selling agent or the seller's agent know. So there's all this miscommunication that typically when I would be able to go to a closing for my sellers, mm-hmm. you're at that table, you have that communication, and then you just shoot the text that the sellers weren't able to be there saying, hey, everything's good. You know, mm-hmm. Your checks will be in the mail. So mm-hmm. I can tell that that's not something that's happened in your world based on your reaction, but I've heard a couple times, like, there's this lack of communication about the closing actually taking place because there's so much disconnect at the closing table.
Yeah, I can see that from a seller side. This is kind of, I guess I don't want to say it's rare. It's new to the world of being on the selling side, that the sellers will call and ask, did we close? Whereas the sellers were never there before COVID. That was, they had pre-signed and one of us would show up.
Yes.
And the documents. But now they call and they're like, did we close? And, you know, we assume yes, because we haven't heard anything. But at the same time, I guess based on that story, the answer could be no, we didn't. But I guess I don't know how they got through that without somebody. Was it a walkthrough issue?
It was a walkthrough issue, and it wasn't my brokerage. So, you know, again, it's mm-hmm. it's conversations, but it was a walkthrough issue, and the buyer didn't mention it until they were at the closing table and they looked at their attorney and say, what can we do about this? Whereas a lot of times as agents, we have that communication. How did the walkthrough go? You know, and there are some times where no news is good news, right? You don't call the yep. buyer's agent when you're on the listing side. So I think it was that assumption, no news was good news. And I'm just wondering if the buyers went home, talked about it, you know, amongst themselves, decided later was a big deal and then brought up the closing table. I'm not there to know for a fact, but.
Yeah, which that definitely happens. Sometimes we're not aware of any walkthrough issues until we're literally sitting at the closing table, which is fine. But, you know, obviously we'd prefer to know earlier just so we can start to have that conversation and put everybody on notice that, you know, we're going to try to work through this, but there's a possibility it may not close. I just find it really strange that nobody knew anything. Because when we hear about it, even at the closing table, buyer says, oh, yeah, walkthrough. There was this, that, and the other. You know, they left a bunch of stuff. Who knows what? We'd still try to get in contact with the seller's attorney to say, we have a problem. Like, we're right. looking for, you know, a $1,500 cleanout credit because you guys left a bunch of junk. And so at least somebody would know something. And usually they respond with, you know, hey, I got to talk to my client, and sometimes their clients are MIA, but usually getting resolution is tough at the table because, you know, they're off in their office doing whatever they're doing. But nobody knowing is strange.
Well, this goes back to then going back to the pre and post possession we just talked about. You know, if you're trying to get pre possession of a home, you know that that's the seller's giving you access to their home early. Mm-hmm. So now you're doing a final walkthrough before you're actually closing. If you even take that opportunity, because you might be so happy that you're moving in that they bypass that final walkthrough. And once they move in, I have to believe it's very hard to get the sellers to correct anything. But have you ever seen where a buyer holds up closing because they moved in, there was a problem and the sellers refuse to fix it, so they don't want to close?
No, I have not seen that, because usually in all the pre and post, well, the pre-closing possessions, you take this as is. That is your final walkthrough. As soon as you move in and you take possession, it's over. There's no asking for anything. We're done. But that begs the question of, well, all right, well, if I'm a seller and the buyer says, hey, there are all these problems now that I want fixed, how am I going to get you out? If I'm like, yeah. No, close or get out. And they go, yeah, well, we're not closing. How are you going to get me out? I mean, it hasn't gotten this contentious in any situation that we've had, thankfully. But it's a possibility if you have a buyer who's, I guess, savvy enough to know that there aren't really options for a seller, and I guess ballsy enough to do it.
Yeah. Well, let's go back. Let's go to the landlord tenant. Do you know, a lot of times, yeah, So if the knowledge is there, a lot of times for a tenant moving into a place of a landlord, again, the pre and post possession, which maybe post COVID, when, you know, whether it's 2022, 2023, when, you know, things get go a different direction again, maybe we'll go back to not really having as much pre and post possession. But you think about it, to your point of if a buyer's going to be quote unquote ballsy enough to do things, I can't believe sometimes what tenants will do when they move into a property. Yeah. So that was an interesting statement you just made.
Yeah. Tenants can do all sorts of stuff. And being a landlord right now is not something that I would have the stomach for personally. I mean, obviously we're lawyers, we're risk averse to begin with. But it's so dicey right now to do any of that. So I feel for the kind of smaller landlords, the not huge commercial ones where they've got tons of properties and enough cash flow to make these things go. But for, you know, the guys who have a couple, you know, two or three duplexes and, you know, they're just making a little extra scratch on the side or saving for the kids' college fund, whatever. It's so hard and it's so costly to try to get anybody out that it's prohibitive at this point. Hence why a bunch of people sold off their portfolios as soon as the new landlord tenant laws were in place.
They did what?
A bunch of them tried to sell off their portfolios when that new law went in 2019.
Yeah, 2019. Yep. Yeah, there was a lot of, at least we saw on our side, a lot of things going on the market. People who have never rented before or had properties were coming in. So they didn't know any different. Sometimes not knowing any different is a blessing as opposed to when you're used to something. Well, if you had to give advice to on the buyer side that wanted to get pre and post possession, they wanted to take pre-possession, what could you tell them as far as preparing themselves for the best way to go about maybe getting it? What should they have to protect themselves? I know it's usually the seller, but what could the buyer do to protect themselves in pre and post?
Buyer's protection is pretty minimal on a pre-closing possession. Honestly, if somebody just handed them the keys, they'd be perfectly happy, right? Yes. Their contents should be insured. That's the only real big risk, because if that place goes up in flames, which I hope never happens, their stuff won't be covered unless they have a current homeowner's insurance policy that extends that coverage. But if they're, you know, renters that are buying their first home and moving stuff in early, that's really one of the only things that they're going to run into a risk for, is if for some reason the house were to perish and all of their stuff went too. They wouldn't have coverage. The current seller's homeowner's insurance would not cover them. So that's really their only big risk, is to make sure that they can get coverage for their stuff. And if they don't care that much, then the renter's policies are so cheap. I always marvel at people who are like, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, yeah, but you're going to get 99% of it back.
Yes.
When you cancel the policy in a week, I realize that's more work for the Steves of the world, and they don't get a ton off of that, but you know, it's just part of the service of, you know, providing your client what they need. So buyers, you have it easy on pre-closing. Obviously on post-closing, you have to make sure they're insured, that, you know, you're going to basically be covered if something were to happen in that place as people are moving out, that they're not dinging your walls up as the movers are coming through with, you know, the slate pool table, whatever the case may be. It's kind of, they've just flopped back and forth. Though I will say post closings, again, I see less than pre closing.
You know, when I see it is if somebody wants to finish out a school year for their child. So they put their house on the market, maybe in February, March, not knowing how long it's going to take to sell. And we'll see in the private remarks, seller would like to stay through end of school year. Now, whether that ends up happening or not, I did have one of those up in Manlius where they let somebody finish the school year and then they moved in. But it was a win on both sides because my buyers also wanted their kids to finish the school year where they currently were. So the timing ended up being okay. And it wasn't they didn't have to buy to sell, right? So there was that flexibility. It wasn't necessarily the domino effect involved.
Yes. And that domino effect is also a thing anymore because we've got rate locks that expire or that get really close to expiring, right? Because of the amount of time title and survey takes. So it's getting better. And then we've got sellers who are sometimes like, well, my buy's not ready, so I'm not going to close. We're just going to wait, even though there's really no contractual requirement that they have to close on their purchase. It's not contingent. So you're supposed to leave when we're ready to close, but obviously getting them out, not going to happen. So they're just going to sit there and we're going to wait. And then you've got this whole effect all the way down the line of people buying and selling, buying and selling, buying and selling. They can't go because we've got this one piece here that's holding it all up. And that's a struggle too, because we can't make them move. As much as we can jump and yell and scream, people are like, well, what are the options? Like, well, you can declare time is of the essence and your option is to walk away. Is that what you want to do? I'm happy to do that for you. But it's not going to be ideal at the end of the day, because again, your only option is to walk. Most people at that point don't.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of times the, having a home to sell or having a home to close on will lose out to somebody who maybe is giving a couple $1,000s less on the purchase price, but they have no home to sell, no contingency to mess with, because then the person selling does not have to worry about that domino effect affecting their purchase.
Which is totally a thing. There's no question. And it's very frustrating, especially when we have a seller that is like, no, I can't close on my other thing. No, no, can't do it. Still waiting. It's all good. We're going to get there. I'm like, well, yeah, except we kind of, we're there. Just waiting on you.
My phrase of Sunday, I kept talking to Tracy, who, you know, is my partner. I kept saying, did I mention I love real estate? Did I mention I love real estate? Because obviously I call the show real estate. I love it. But there are days where I'm like, real estate, do I love it? Because you only have so much, you know, control. And I think for the most part, our industry is good at cooperation and trying to keep everybody, you know, informed of what's happening. But as soon as one party drops off, then and that communication stops, it makes everything difficult. And pre and post possession without communication, I have to believe, would be a nightmare, you know?
Yeah, it's not fun. Definitely not fun, which is why we still don't like to do it. Don't like it at all. If people negotiate it up front, then we have no choice but to deal with it on our end. And that's happened a few times, not all the time, but a few. I would much appreciate it, but people don't know, right? We don't know when closings are going to be scheduled or how efficient everybody's going to be on it. So trying to get that done at the outset is tough. I mean, we always have the conversation with our folks. Here's your contract close date. What does that mean for you? Because that date is on or about, which probably means we're blowing past it by at least 2 weeks. So what's your living situation? Are you telling me that literally this contract closes on the date you're supposed to be out of your apartment or something else? Do you have a place to go? Because if you don't, you're going to be homeless. So find a couch, find a parent or a friend or a hotel, whatever the case may be, and get prepared, because there's no guarantee you're going to get in for pre-closing. We can ask, but lots of people just say no still. Or you're going to be sleeping in your car. And then what do you do with your stuff? I don't know. But these are all conversations we have in the beginning in hopes that it at least kind of hits some sort of chord with folks as they're trying to figure out what it looks like for them. Because that's the thing. It's just, I think it's the lack of, it's just the surprise of it, I guess, because everybody expects it's going to go smoothly. And for the most part, it does, right? You know, we get through the whole mortgage commitment and title and all that. It just takes longer. It takes longer, and contract close dates are just getting shorter, which is goofy to me because it just doesn't happen.
We had one. They said they wanted to close in 25 days. I said, even if it was, and it was a loan, it was financing. I said, this is never going to fly. You know, 25 days. Maybe if we were in Tennessee, or I've seen Pennsylvania go really fast. Some of the other states I've been to, but in New York, 25 days does not. I joke that I have an Airbnb. So when they say they're going to be homeless and they want pre and post possession, I'm like, well, I got the Airbnb. And then they think it's funny when we're talking about in the beginning, but when it gets down to the wire and they're like, so about that Airbnb, and not that I've ever used it, but because it is
but still finding everything out. Yep. It's really difficult for people to do that. And I feel for them. I really, really, really do. But at the same time, sometimes like, yeah, we had this conversation. I know your lease is about to expire and there's nothing I can do for that. You can ask the landlord. We can try to push, but obviously we can only get there as fast as the bank allows us, assuming that there's financing and the sellers do. And, you know, the sellers are, I guess, they've become difficult, not all, but I think they know the position that they have in the market, a lot of them. So they're asking for things that are a little outside of the bounds of normalcy on some of the deals. So it's become interesting to see that and just to watch buyers and that they're willing to accept it. because they want this house so bad because they put in offers on 20 other ones and weren't successful for whatever reason. Right. It's hard to see from a buyer's perspective, all of that going on.
Well, and to your point, sometimes when the offers are coming in and what's getting accepted from the buyers, it really does. You can almost tell how many homes that they've liked that they've lost based on where their offer is, what their escalation clause amount is, what contingency they have, and what they accept back from the sellers. And, mm-hmm. Just recently I had clients and they said, this is all crazy. And I said, I can tell you this person hasn't lost a house yet based on the fact they want all these things and they're coming in under asking. Do you know what I mean? And this person has lost like 17 and now they're, and it's just this huge, it's a learning curve that you watch people go through. But,
Totally. And it becomes like and depending on their timing too, right? There's maybe that, which leads to a little more, I don't want to say desperation, but need to get to find a place and actually have that peace of mind that, yes, I've got a contract. Odds are this is probably going to go through so long as we get the financing, because I've waived inspections. I've waived everything else that I can possibly have under the sun apart from financing, because I just don't have that amount of cash on hand. But it's an interesting place to see, and I'll be interested to see how it maybe starts to even out at some point. Because I mean, people have been saying it for 4-ish years that the market's crazy, it's a seller's market, inventory so low that everything's just getting scooped up immediately, and that's true, and everybody's like, yeah, it'll calm down, and it's like, well, it's not coming, it's actually getting worse. COVID didn't help, but I even before COVID, there didn't seem to be any better, any light at the end of the tunnel that this is going to get better. And now you put on the fact that we can't even do a new build. People can't afford to build anymore, anything that's a reasonable size. So you take that out of the equation, and now we're just back to whatever the inventory is on currently built homes, and there's just not much.
No, and if somebody who just built a home, depending on what they've done to it and, and how much they paid to build it and stuff. We just watched in our market, somebody build a home and sell it, hasn't, closed, knock on wood, but they, within a year and a half, they made a profit because this market is just so, so crazy, and I can't think of a time where you could ever build and make a, you can flip a house and make a profit, but sure. To build a home and make a profit is just unheard of.
Not in that short amount of time. That's incredible, which it's, the inflation, I think, Jason was saying, right, on like 2x4s and materials and all that stuff. We had a client that was going to build, and they were supposed to break ground in the spring of 2020. Didn't happen for whatever reason, delays, whatever. But ultimately, they were ready to close in early 2021, and they got their quote back from their builder. And it was between what I think 40 and 60 grand more for building materials.
Wow.
At that point, and they were like, oh boy, I don't So building is just not an option. I mean, unless you want like a really tiny house, that's all you're gonna get.
I talked to a builder and he said they're building smaller homes. I mean, they're still expensive, but they're building smaller, and they're doing the one level to a point. When we were talking before we went on the air about people wanting, they're staying here longer. They want either the condos that just have one thing attached to them. They want the smaller ranches. And so builders, because of the cost of building, are actually going to probably gear that way a little bit because it's more affordable to build, more affordable for people to buy. And then you don't need such large lots either for it.
Right.
So.
Right. So you can get some more in there, which is interesting because I guess as people are figuring out that they can work from home, it felt like people wanted bigger houses. Like that was part of the shift in the market. Yes. And, I need an office space for me and my significant other or my kids because they do schoolwork at home. Or I just need my space because everybody's in my face all the time kind of thing. Right. Just let me have my little 500 square feet where I can just shut the door and be by myself. That's not a laundry room. That's become a thing. So we're building smaller homes, but we're still in, I guess, a COVID-esque environment in that we can work from home or that there's that flexibility, which people seem to like. At least I haven't come across anybody that's like, yeah, this flexibility is terrible. Yeah. it feels like the smaller home is, you know, not necessarily what people are looking for, as you know, if they're in that kind of mid-range where they've got, you know, kids, et cetera, dogs. So it's interesting to hear that. I guess there's obviously a market for those, or there's market for
housing. Well, it's the retirees. They used to just leave the state. Now they kind of want to stay here and travel or do. I talked to Bob Wicks, the town supervisor for Lysander, and you know, they're talking about putting maybe one of the senior livings, 55 and older communities. If, you know, again, it's just conversations, it's in talk, because that's what the community is saying they want. They want the smaller homes, one level, 55
years patio homes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be interesting. And I mean, that's great. Like, that's fantastic. But as for everybody else that's in the market trying to buy a home that's not in a 55 plus living community,
they want big.
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, I guess we can remove them out of the competition. They can go there and start to shop at that point. Because I know obviously ranches always go super quick for a lot, which, you know, is fair because there's only so many and they obviously take up a bigger footprint because of their layout. But for the retirees or the, you know, still here doing my thing, but I'm getting older, right? I've got grandkids maybe that I watch, that kind of thing. That market's tough too, because I think we've had people that have bought homes, ranch homes, for 20 or 30 over asking.
Oh, yeah. More. Yep.
Which is nuts.
Oh, yeah. And we're lucky that we're here in Central New York, because again, I talk to people in Texas and California, and you know, they'd be happy to just pay 20 or 30 over. They're more like 60, 80, 100. It's crazy. So,
and I feel like, well, somebody said on that Monday morning mastermind group that they didn't feel like there was a bubble. And I play in this little sandbox of Central New York, so I don't know, but I feel like when you say that in these kind of more hot bedy places of real estate where there was a problem last time, that people are overpaying again to that extent. Granted, you know, maybe they're more creditworthy than some of those prior folks, but still, you know, I think people are maxing their cash flow to the extent that they can to make sure that they can get something. So I guess I question whether that's coming again and the number of foreclosures is going to kind of skyrocket for a bit. I mean, it will post COVID just because they've been on hold, but during the market kind of in COVID and after that, I'll be curious to see what happens, because it seems that inventory is low in lots of places, because there is a new build problem, right? That's the same across the board, no matter what state we are in, that materials are just too costly to build. If that's going to have an impact on the kind of world, the real estate bubble world, and if there ends up being a lot of foreclosures after that because people just overextended.
Well, and I definitely, I felt that way. I've expressed that, you know, either short sales or foreclosures, or as I mentioned to you before, investors who are not getting the rent money, who just want, when this is all said and done, they just want to get out of the landlord business, if there'll be those types that come on the market as well. So, well, I appreciate all your information, Christy. I'll probably have you on again because I like hearing everything from the law side, right? We go into all kinds of areas, but it's the legal piece. You know, we put it together in the beginning and then we kind of hand it to you guys and say, you know, here's the terms we came up with. Now you got to pull all the other pieces, the abstract, the survey, the, you know, and make sure that at the end of the day, we've talked about zoning, which maybe we can have another conversation about that and whatnot. But I appreciate your information. And I can't tell you how many times our mastermind, something you say in there helps me later in the week or the following week, just be more clear with my clients or with the office. So.
No, absolutely. On all fronts. The feeling is very mutual with everybody else, even though, you know, we're obviously at the end of the game, hearing the pieces that happened before or the little things that we don't know about because we're not in the insurance piece and we're not in the mortgage piece and we're not even in the listing or selling piece, is helpful for us to do our jobs better for our mutual clients, which is all we're here to do at the end of the day.
Absolutely. So I will enjoy the rest of your Tuesday and I will
thank you. You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this week's episode of Real Estate I Love It. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review on whatever stream platform you're using for your podcast. See you next time.